I'm with you, Walt. I wouldn't want to have any more of them done either at that kind of price. Well, I'm very fortunate. As far as I know, I'm in real good health. I take a multivitamin and a fish oil pill and a thyroid pill. And that's all I take. And I wouldn't take the multivitamin, but my wife would knock me over the head. And if I didn't take the fish oil pill, my ophthalmologist and my eye doctor would hit me over the head. So I guess I'll take them three pills and be happy with it. And thankful that's all I have to take. But looking forward to tomorrow night. Old Chad's going to call Lynette. I'm going to sit here and ride along with him. And he's going to do the formal portion, and I'm going to do the swap net, and then I'm going to give it back over to him for the rag chew portion. So I'm looking forward to that, give him a little experience, and get him on his way, get him started. I was telling him, I'll tell you, and if everybody out there in radio land is listening, I can still remember the first night I called this net. However many years ago it was, I sat down in front of the radio and had all my paperwork ready, and you know, had my preamble and everything set out, had everything ready to go. Walt, I was sitting here soaking wet. I was sweating a bullet, I'm telling you, buddy. But after I got the net started, everything, I calmed down and I cooled down and had a good time, and I've enjoyed it ever since. But well, getting back to the doctors and things, I hope you don't have to have any more MRIs anytime soon. I'm looking at now is physical therapy every Thursday at 2 o'clock. And then the 31st of this month, I've got to go see my eye doctor and get these cataracts removed. N0TR Tommy, he told me how easy it was, and don't be scared, there ain't no pain to it, you in there and out, and they even told me that once I get it done, I might not even need these glasses anymore. But Gary, I got feels good today. I had Chad come over and got them wires straightened out. I went out there going to wash that old truck, and it had that pine sap all over it. I tried Grease Lightning, I tried Purple Power, I tried everything getting that off. I ended up, I have a gallon of lacquer thinner. I ended up washing that truck down with lacquer thinner. And I didn't smoke a cigarette while I was doing it. But I got it off, my daughter comes out and said, Daddy, that thing looks like it's ready to paint. I cleaned the chrome wheels up on it and all of that, but I'm like you, I'm ready for bed tonight. I am getting tired. I hope I feel that good tomorrow. I'm thinking about tackling and putting my head liner in it. I know how to do it, I just ain't done it in a long time. But I'm glad I got the old truck running. Chad don't know what that meant to me. But you're going to break Chad in right tomorrow night. And, well, you can't because you ain't got that much on the swap net book. You're going to give it all to him.
All to him, what would I do?
And look and listen and count to make sure he got the count right. But I appreciate you trying to help him out. But boy, I would have never took a Wednesday night to try it. But I sat here, I don't know, for about a month. I'd log in to Echo Link, and whoever was calling the net would see me up there. I didn't have enough sense to tell them I was just shadowing till there toward the end. But I usually got my count pretty close, and like Chad, I was missing more, and I'd forgotten to count myself, but I really appreciate Chad jumping in and getting really involved in handling traffic and being what a part of what amateur radio is all about, Gary. And
know he's sticking around here for the round table. There may be somebody else out there. So have you got anything else for us, Gabriel, before I close the net?
No, that's about it, Walt. I'll let you close the net out and get on to the round table. I'm going to step in yonder and get me something to drink. I may be back in here and participate in the round table a little bit. But in the meantime, I enjoyed it, and I'm glad you got your truck running. When I got mine straightened out, I was real happy about that, so I understand that feeling real well. But you take care, and hopefully we'll talk to you tomorrow night, or listen, hear you tomorrow night, if we don't talk to you before then. I'll say 73 to you for now, Walt. You take care, and we'll do it again. K4OYM in the net, KI4DOS.
I always appreciate you sticking around and talking a little bit. So with that, I'll say 73, Gary. All right, if I miss anybody for check-ins or write you, please call K4OYM in net control. Like I got everybody, if you'll hold on just a second, I will file my net report electronically. I'll be right back. Looks like I messed up somewhere. I gotta amend this net report. I'll be right back. Folks, put my big fingers on this little keyboard on this phone. Ain't no way I had 12 pieces of traffic. But I appreciate your patience. This is K4OIM, now securing the Blue Ridge 2-meter net, but our thanks for all that checked in tonight. All of you on the pre-check-ins and the Gary and Chad that stuck around for right chew. So we will now return the repeater back to amateur radio use. 73s and good night. But if you want to stick around for some round table, there'll be somebody here. If you want to talk about something about radio or antennas, especially the new hams, we'll be all here to help. That's what radio's about. So 73s, good night, and God bless.
So I am KL4NUE.
Is it Chad?
Okay, Walt, I got a couple questions for you. I know you're tired, so I'll keep it kind of short. But this, if Gary's in there, this may be more directed toward him, I'm not sure, or anybody actually. But the first question is a little bit of history about the repeater. So, has the repeater ever been activated for an emergency? And how are operators notified that the repeater is in emergency mode or emergency status or whatever?
It has been activated, especially this time of year when we have these storms and all, and usually somebody with sky warned or Avery's come on in and announce it. And if you come on there and trying to make a contact or get a signal report or something like that, they will let you know that the repeater has been activated and it's only for emergency communication.
Okay, so it's not an automated signal. It's an actual net controller that notifies everybody. But is that net controller... Is he or she, are they part of, who is the person who notifies everybody on the repeater that this is, you know, it's an emergency status? Is it some of the club members, or is it just anybody, or I guess it probably would be, I guess, a sky-worn guy or something like that?
Jim. During a heat wave in, I think this was 2011 or 2012, we had a very nasty series of several days of very bad severe weather. Something referred to as a derecho outbreak came through, and the entire area saw conditions with massive hail up to tennis ball and baseball size, and wind gusts in excess of, measured at ground level, 85 to 90 miles per hour. Much of the area saw at least winds of 75. There was widespread damage, and KD4PH, who's since become a silent key, Ken, ran the Greenville County Skywarn Net and had a direct access to the National Weather Service in Greenville-Spartanburg. It was on the radio note to stay off of the air because it was a directed net, and only emergency communications were allowed. If you were experiencing damage and you had a damage report, he took that. Other than that, you had to stay off the repeater.
So it is directed.
Establish net control. They'll be the net control person. They'll handle all the traffic that comes through.
That traffic gets reported up to the National Weather Service or Skywarn or whoever's directing the net. I would assume that whoever's directing the net has access to that entity to report that information to. Is that correct?
That's correct.
It's useful information. I appreciate that, Daniel and Walt. Okay, Walt, you ready for the next question?
Daniel, I remember, I believe it was less than a year ago, where we had bad storms and tornadoes touching down, that the net was activated. It was late in the evening. Do you remember that? It's been less than a year ago.
I probably didn't have my radio on at that time. I remember the ones in 2011 or 2012 during the heat wave. I believe you about the other one, but I didn't have my radio on then. Was it a full-on 100% net where they had a net control? It wasn't just if anybody has a report, just call Skywarn or whatever. They kicked everybody off the radio? Was it like that?
Here it was. KI4, DOS, are you still in there?
Well, LZI Portable here.
That a no. Go ahead, Andy.
Well, everything, but way back before the internet existed, if it was something they knew something ahead of time, I know I heard some others talking about it too. He's another silent key, WB4ZBZ. They would send him over to the weather service office. This was the days before the internet, and they had chat, NWS chat, and he would take reports from over there while at the weather service. But this was many, many years ago before there was any internet. Nowadays, they got what you call a NWS chat. That's what the Skywarn Net controllers use today. They come over here and they use this repeater here today as a backup to the ones that they do use. But prior to 2010, this here used to be the primary Skywarn repeater.
Station ID. So Andy, now the primary would be, I guess, Marietta K90H, and then they link across the state, because that is the Skywarn Net. So I'm assuming that's primary, is that correct?
For LZI Portable, the primary now is the 14547, the K908 repeater, and it links up with the warning system that's back over here in Oconee and Pickens County. Most of those on the warning system is UHF repeaters, most of them are, except for maybe one or two that's 2 meters. And he's got that also, it links down the Columbia. But this and here, if there's any problem with any of that, they always come back here to 610 for backup. But prior to 2010, right here is where the primary Sky One used to be, all the way back to about the time, I guess, that I know I remember hearing it back in the late 70s here on this repeater.
Well, I just trying to figure things out. When that storm came through the other day, I didn't feel like I was too prepared, so I wrote down a list of things I needed to get straightened out, and one of them was just trying to figure out where information comes in and how information goes out. But I think I'm pretty sure I got a handle on it now. But I just wanted a little bit of history about the repeater and, you know, had it been activated and what that looks like when it is activated. And I think my questions have been answered. So I appreciate the information, Andy.
I mean, it was sometime in the late 70s here on this frequency right here, but they had a real bad storm over at Tocoa and some flooding, and over there, I can't remember that university, and they had a lake something over there that burst. It was all over this repeater back at the time when that happened. That was back in the late 70s then. You certainly didn't have the internet then, and people like WB4ZBZ and others would go over to the Weather Service office and take reports off of here. Nowadays, the Sky One Net controls use the chat, the NWS chat, but that didn't exist in those days.
Well, I understand. Like I said, I appreciate the info. Okay, Walt, you ready for another question?
Yes.
So, keeping in mind that, you know, this may be sound like a stupid question, but I'm just going to put it out there because I'm not quite understanding why things are the way they are. So, I want to have a short discussion about ladder lines. What is the function of a ladder line? Is that, I think I know, I'm not sure, but I think the ladder line is what gets your impedance in specification. Is that wrong, right, or what is, tell me about a ladder line.
Ladder line is the best feed line you can get, as long as you keep it away from metal. That's why I don't use ladder line now, because I've got to bring it in this camper, and there's no way to do it unless I take a window out and put plexiglass in and drill a hole and bring it in that way. Ladder line and open feed line is another good one. But back in the old days when they used open feed line, that was just bare wire separated by spacers 6 to 8 inches apart. And when it rained, the old timers would have to take a candle or a block of wax and go out there and wax that open line to keep their SWR down where it needs to be. Andy or Daniel, can y'all help him out with this question?
Well, see, I poured. Well, I don't know as much as I wished I knew about it, but you got different size. You got the big stuff, and you got what used to be used with TV, 300 ohm twin lead. Two different sizes. And as he says, you got to keep that stuff away from metal in order to make it work.
BQ.
Hey, yes, sir.
That is a big question, and I do believe you won't learn everything you need to know about ladder line in this one conversation. But let's start with what Andy just brought up, and that's twin lead, quite often used for television reception. It had no little windows cut in, but it looked a whole lot like ladder line. Or there's several words, several phrases used for what we would call ladder line. So it's a balanced line, one thing. That's important. The magic that happens with ladder line or open feed line, or however people refer to it, is that it is a balanced line. Both conductors separated by a distance carry both the flow in one direction and the flow back again. RF is alternating current. It alternates both to the antenna and back from the antenna. As long as the impedance is balanced, then you have very little impedance is just what it sounds like. It impedes the flow of the signal to the antenna. So if you have an impedance mismatch, your transceiver needs 50 ohms. That was decided on a very long time ago. If the feed line, which is either a ladder line, a balanced line, or coax, all of those are called feed lines. But coax, while it starts out at 50 ohms, is dependent on its length, especially for the return current. It depends on the length. You have much less loss if you have something less than 100 feet, let's say. All of the tables that you might see, let me let this drop a second. That are published are the impedance across coax for 100 feet. And it's less if you don't need that much. And if you have a 300-foot run, it's going to be quite a lot. It's going to be three times the signal loss. There's almost no signal loss with ladder line because it's balanced. And it's correct that you do have to keep it away from metal objects. You have to keep it away. You cannot let it touch the ground because you'll lose everything into the ground. Coax is great because of its shielding. But the shielding is also what makes it an imbalanced feed line. The impedance on the center conductor and the impedance on the inside and the outside of the shield are not the same. They're not balanced. And then also they put PL-259s on them, which is between 72 and 75 ohms. So you don't have a constant impedance feed line. You get a little impedance bump at the connector. Unless you use something like an end connector, which is a constant impedance of 50 ohms, or a BNC connector is constant impedance. So that may have just muddied the water for you. I don't know. What do you think?
No, actually, that cleared up a lot, because my next question was, what is the big deal about RG-58? Why can't I use RG-58? And after your explanation, I'm pretty sure I got an answer on that, because it obviously has a different mismatch or a different shielding level, one of the two, which I guess in reality kind of sort of sounds like maybe the same thing, or that's what creates the mismatch. That cleared things up a little bit. But I don't have to use a ladder line. So here's where I'm going with this is, the way my property is situated, I have a mystery antenna up in the trees that's from end to end is east and west. Well, the way the trees are set up here, I want to get one north and south. But in order to do that, half of my antenna is going to be on somebody else's property. And I'm not sure, you know, I'm comfortable with that. I don't think they'd say anything. But, so I'm thinking about using an infed, because I can use an infed north and south. But I had some questions about a ladder line, and thinking that I needed to use a ladder line on an infed. But from what I'm hearing is that I don't have to use a ladder line if I don't want. I can just use coax to feed the end of the end of the antenna. Is that correct? Comment.
It's KN4 TZW. Yeah, there's a couple of things that might help you. You don't have to use ladder line ever if you don't want to. It's just another form of feeding your antenna, just like coax. RG-58 is at the bottom of the barrel. If you'll get a good piece of, you know, 213 or something, and just hold a piece of it and look at it, you'll see the difference. It's pretty obvious. RG-58 works okay in a car, but something like an infed, you can. Most people use coax, but you're going to have an onion, generally like a 49-to-1 if it's a infed halfway, because the impedance is so high. You know, like a dipole, if you feed it in the middle, your impedance is going to work out pretty close to 50 ohms. I think it's like 75 when it's up in there, when the antenna's in there. But if you move the feed line to like an off-center fed dipole, it changes the impedance more. So you'd need like a 4-to-1, something like that, because it's going to be around, I don't know, 200 ohms or whatever. Then if you move it out towards the end, an infed, it goes even higher. The advantage with using a balanced line, like open wire or twin lead or window line, ladder line, is that line becomes part of your antenna. It radiates. It radiates. And if you get it around metal or whatnot, like Walt was saying, it skews your SWR. It's coupled with your antenna, as to where coax is decoupled from it, and it's not part of it. Now, sometimes if you get an odd number wavelength of coax, I won't really go into all that too much, but it can mess things up. But generally, you just whack your coax however long you want. RG-58, something like that, has a lot of loss. You know, in the higher in frequency you go, the worse it is. HF is not too awful bad for loss, but a balanced line, you generally don't have any loss at all. But it works real good with a tuner. Like, I've got an old manual tuner, and you can put, like, just one long piece of wire. You can use it, just a long wire, or you can feed it with that balanced line into that tuner and, you know, make that part of the antenna system itself. There's a, the antenna deal is a lot more to it than when I first started this stuff. I've been in it for about 3 years now. I just thought you stuck a wire in there, but there's a lot to it. There really is, and the whole impedance thing. And I went and got the ARRL antenna book, and it's a real eye opener to me. But I don't know if that helps you at all. But you're probably not gonna get all the answers in one evening. I can tell you that much. There's a lot to it. KN4TZW.
That sounds about right. And I like I said, I got into this hobby to keep my mind sharp, and it seems just like everything, every day there's something else to learn. And sometimes I just try to read and study, and sometimes I just have to step away for a few minutes or step away for a couple of hours and say, I just need to digest all this. So I'm in the early phases of trying to figure all this out. And as slow as I am, I'm thinking it's going to take me years to get all this figured out. And I don't know that I'll ever figure it all out. I don't think that's what this hobby is about. But I do know that if it makes things a whole lot easier to operate anything, whether it's equipment or a butcher knife or whatever, if you understand how it works, then that helps a lot. And that's kind of where I am. I don't have an issue with going to the wire man and get an antenna. I don't have an issue with that at all. And antennas, you know, I'm going to put one up north and south and east and west, and it'll be there for years, and probably won't ever, you know, have to make another one for a while. But that's not my point. My point is that I'm just trying to understand, so that just helps me better understand what's happening with the radio and actually what happens when I key the mic. And if I can understand that, I'm going to be better off. But that's going to take some time for me to get to that point. So, yeah, I don't have any expectations of being, you know, just brilliant on this in 2 days, because I don't think that's going to ever happen, especially with me. But any information that I can get, I can digest that and think about it for a while and figure things out. But yeah, thank you so much for the information. Like I said, anything helps. And Larry, I appreciate your help too. So, all right, I got one last question. I know everybody's tired, and I appreciate you staying up with me, but let me let this repeater cycle. Tuners, why can't I just... Now, I'm not going to do this, but this is a rhetorical question. Why can't I just stick a wire in the tree and let my tuner do the best it can do?
Let me say a couple of things here. Let me see if I got this. You can, kind of. Okay, first thing, a tuner, like an automatic tuner that's on these HF radios, is not really a tuner. I mean, if your SWR is over 3:1, it won't fix it really. But now, if you get a good, like a manual tuner, a roller inductor tuner, or even one with tapped inductors, like little settings from MFJ, you can pretty much get the impedance matched on a barbed wire fence or a car or anything. I mean, anything you want to. It'll work that well. Now, how well it radiates out and people hear it, that's a different story. And I don't think you're slow at all. Look, I've never bought an antenna. I bought an analyzer. Well, I'll take it back. I bought a VHF antenna. But I think it's fun to make them. I make antennas all the time. And you can just use wire. Hey, look, you can make a vertical, a quarter wave of any band you want, you know, one quarter of that wavelength with just a piece of wire or a big piece of aluminum or anything, and then stick a bunch of radials on it, and it'll work good. It's just like the dipole. You got both legs up in the air. Well, you can do the same thing, and it'll match. If it's a quarter wave, you'll have about 50 ohms. Just like if you build a Yagi, if it's a three-element Yagi, it'll generally match. And then there's a lot of quirks, like, you know, verticals, antennas will radiate on their certain harmonics, you know, like if you build an antenna for, say, a 40-meter vertical, and you build it just for that band, well, you're also going to pick up, I think it's 15 meters, just because it resonates again on its, like, next harmonic level. I don't really know, I don't have the fancy terminology to explain that to you, but if you get you an analyzer, or I found a good deal on a used one, and just start making some junk. I mean, as long as you don't, your SWR ain't way on up there when you use the radio, you're not going to hurt nothing. I mean, you know, you seem pretty sharp, so I don't, you know, I'm like you. I tear things apart, dude. I mean, I need to know how they work. I mean, telling me to sweep the floor don't help me if I don't know why I'm sweeping the floor. I mean, I understand what you're doing. And don't let it overwhelm you. I know that much, because I don't know if you got your general yet. I think they go about doing it kind of the wrong way. They ask you all those questions to get your general license when you wouldn't really know the answer to them because you ain't never worked on no HF. But when you start talking on the HF radios or fooling with them, all that stuff starts to click. I mean, it starts making more sense to me anyway. Some people may just be in this thing just to talk. You know, they don't care how none of it works and whatnot. But anyway, let me let this drop. You can just stick a long wire in the tree if that's what you want to do. KN4TZW.
You're exactly right. I have to know how it works, and sweeping the floor is a really good analogy. And I know understanding details about, you know, some things, devil's in the details, is not that big a deal. But other things, you know, devil in the details is quite a bit. And I'm thinking that, you know, I got a machine shop and build engines down here at the machine shop, and that's something that, you know, the devil's in the details. And I'm seeing that with antennas, that's going to be one of those things. But I do have an automatic tuner from LDG Electronics. And I, you know, it tunes what I've got really well. And I'm just thinking if I get something off or I get something wrong, you know, am I going to damage the radio? Or I'm just trying to get to a level to where if I decide to construct one or put something up in the air, I can be confident enough to know, okay, well, you might not be exactly right, but you're close enough to have some decent SWR and not, you know, not damage anything. But yeah, this information is very helpful, and I mean, y'all just don't know. I mean, we just, let me let this repeater cycle. Anybody that's listening has been in a situation before to where you don't know what you don't know, and with this kind of stuff, at my level, I don't know what I don't know, and I don't even know. I'm so far behind, I don't even know what to ask. And that's, you know, I'm just trying to get to a point to where I can understand some basic fundamentals, to where I can halfway understand. I'm not asking to be a, you know, the wire guy who understands, you know, everything about an antenna. But I'd like to get to a certain level to where, you know, I'm confident enough to know that, well, you know, that's going to work or that's not. And, you know, it's that kind of thing. I'm not, you know, trying to get to a point where I can build 100 antennas a day. That's not my deal. But just understanding why I have to sweep that floor, that's a pretty important thing in my mind. And I know there's probably some other people out there who's thinking that too.
BQ.
Go ahead, Larry.
The Wireman a couple of times. They are a supplier of just about anything you need to build an antenna. They may have some pre-assembled, some they've done the business of selecting what most people would need in order to put the wire up and make an antenna out of it. They have a reference book that I got many years ago. This is, it's called the Wire Book. That's the title of the little paperback book. I've got version 5 of it. They have had other issues since then. But it is a wealth of information about building antennas. That would be one reference that I'd point you to. And since you were acquainted with the Wireman, you know just how to get it. The next one is a podcast. Don't know if you listen to podcasts, but they have been not only entertainment for me, but a source of information that I couldn't have gotten otherwise. There is a service called Blueberry, and that's spelled B-L-U-B-R-R-Y, Blueberry. You can still get a podcast called The Doctor Is In. The fellows who put this on wrote an article in the QST, the ARRL magazine that comes out to members each month, and they had an article in there or a segment in there every month and would answer questions that readers would send in. And they thought so much of that, and it was so popular that they made a podcast of it when those became popular. And it was about 2.5 years in length. Came out bi-weekly, I think. And they're still online at blueberry.com. You can listen to those two guys talk about building antennas and learn a wealth of information. Joel Hallis, who retired from, I think he just had health issues and had dropped practically everything. He had been working with the ARRL for many decades, and he was the expert. He was the doctor. And Steve Ford, who still is involved in the podcast networks that the ARRL has, and they have several others if you're interested, he sort of oversees all of the podcasts that the ARRL does. But that one, I still listen to it. I have heard them all 3 or 4 times, but you would do well to listen to them several times. And you're right, there's always something to learn. KK4JPQ.
Everybody on here giving you information about antennas going to tell you that there's nothing like building your own antenna. It's a whole lot cheaper than going to the wire man. Yeah, go up there and get you wire to build it. But there's nothing going to work like a resonant antenna that is cut to length, and you don't have to use an antenna tuner, because anytime I've got, I don't know if you've seen it or not, but I got a Hustler 4-band vertical out here in the backyard. And on the instructions on it, where it's set telling you what length to measure out each of the elements for the traps and all, and it tells you, do not use a tuner. A tuner don't do nothing. It will make fool your radio into thinking it's looking at a 50-ohm antenna. And if your SWR is high and you use that tuner to bring your SWR down in what the radio think is resonance, guess what's happening to that signal? It's turning into heat. It's not going out. You might be feeding 100 watts into it, and you might not be putting, by the time it gets an antenna, 25 watts. Am I correct out there?
Let me go ahead and sign out, and y'all go ahead and carry on here, because by the time I get back around, I'll probably have to be gone anyway. But the old Tom Bray, who's like the Walt, is rebuilding those ancient vacuum tube transmitters. They could withstand a lot of SWR, a lot. The solid state finals in these layers today, that's why they got those, where they cut back on the power, so that you don't damage them. KI4, LCI portable, signing out.
Four ZZW, see Andy. Yeah, he's correct. Well, first of all, Larry, okay, I'll give you a copy of that book, Chad, that he's talking about, because I've read it, and it's a great book from the Wireman. That's who it was written by. And the podcast he's talking about, I've listened to every one of the doctors in. And he's correct about the resonant antenna. I mean, that's what an antenna tuner does, is it tricks your transceiver into seeing the 50 ohms. It doesn't guarantee that your antenna is going to radiate a good signal. That's a whole other topic. If you cut an antenna to work, let me just give you this an example. Last week, I built a 20-meter vertical with scrap aluminum tubing. I just downloaded the app. I cut 1/4 wavelength. That was my center conductor. And then I added a bunch of radio wires, like 20 of them, you know, varied the size of them. I've talked, okay, my impedance and my SWR, my impedance is close to 50 ohms. And I took my analyzer and I went through the whole 20-meter band. And the highest my SWR ever gets, you know, because it changes with frequency, the highest it ever gets is like 1.5. So I know I can talk on the whole 20-meter band without a tuner or anything. And with that little antenna, I've talked to Moscow, Russia, Spain, Europe, all over the place. So you're not going to hurt your radio, these new ones. What Andy's saying is right. It'll start cutting down on the power and won't let you mess it up, you know, unless you really try to. The old tube stuff could handle a lot of SWR and heat. But I think you got enough sense to, you know, you're on the right track. But you might be like me, kind of hooked on the antenna building if you ever start fooling with it. So, but everybody's gave you some good advice. I know that much. KN4TCW. Name here is Gabriel, by the way. I've spoke to you before. But I'm going to jump out of here as well. Have a good evening.
Thank you, Gabriel. I appreciate it. It's KO4NUE for station ID. So the last thing I got is not a question, but it's a statement. And I just want to, I mean, I already know the answer, but just kind of let y'all know where I am. So the statement is, just make sure I'm right. So when I took the exam and upgraded my life, well, when I got my technician, later on, a couple months later, went back and got my general, I kind of, especially when I took the technician exam, I walked out the door and thought, okay, I'm a licensed ham operator, and I know so much about radios and how all this works, because I passed the FCC exam. So after a couple of weeks into it, I started to realize, and so here's the statement. The true learning starts not at the exam or studying for the exam, but the true learning starts when the radio is in the shack and you are actually trying to use it. And I don't mean just talking on one frequency. I mean learning to actually control the radio and move on different frequencies and all the menu trees and now the antennas. So the statement is, the learning starts after the exam, or the learning starts when you start trying to configure all that. Is that a correct statement? Has anybody else been there, or is that, am I off track here?
BQ. Chad, you're absolutely right. As a matter of fact, the fellow that we just honored back in July, Ray Allison, who was very instrumental back in the 50s, 60s, on through the 70s, of developing the repeater that we're talking on right now. He is famous for saying that your license, and that's really any class, all three classes of amateur license, is a license to learn. So this is a science hobby. As much as studying medicine or biology or mathematics, it's a science hobby. And it's quite complicated, sure. But those of us who really like to learn, and you really have to love it, and not be afraid to admit, and I don't think you are, admit that you have much to learn. I've been a ham for going on 10 years now, and I know I've got a lot of learning ahead, but a lot has become clear, and a lot of things start to tie together and make sense. They make sense of each other. Anyway, that podcast that I recommended, I think I got a second on it, and Gabriel, it is very good, and I have them recorded, saved to my hard drive. I expect that I'll listen to them several times through. Anyway, you keep up the questions. We all owe Walt a debt of thanks for making it possible to have this forum to talk about things. And again, I think I said it last week, you never know who's listening. They may never come in. They're out there in the weeds, as we used to say. And they'll never sign in. They'll never take part in the conversation. But they're benefiting also. Anyway, it's really good to talk with you again tonight, Chad. And Walt, thanks to you. I do hope everybody has a good night's rest. KK4, JBQ.
Gabriel, Walt, thank you all so much for the information. And that's been very helpful. And what I do during the week is when I find a stumbling block somewhere, I just reach up and grab me a little postcard, a little index card, and that's a question for Tuesday nights. And I just set it aside. So that's the list of questions that I had for this week. And thank y'all very much for your help. I really appreciate it. And Walt, I got an opportunity today to return the favor to you. So if I'm understanding the way this works or the way this community works, it's all about giving and learning and trying to help. And I had an opportunity to return that today. So I appreciate it, all of you, and I really do. Thank you so much. And this is KO4NUE, and I'll be clear on y'all's final. And y'all have a good week.
K4OIM. Chad, I've been a ham now 43 years and 13 days. And back when I got my novice ticket, there were some Ken Woods and ICOM radios on the market, store-bought. But back then, everybody was buying Heath kits, and you built your own radio. That way you understand what each circuit is in there. And on the novice test, I had to draw a Hartley oscillator. And that would blow a technician's license right now to, they wouldn't even know what a Hartley oscillator is or a Colpitts oscillator or whatever. But I had to draw that oscillator, the tube that went in it, each capacitor, each resistor, and the power supply, and describe the elements in that tube. The filament, the grid, the cathode, and all of that. And then ham radio was dying out. And they got rid of the novice test. First they got rid of, you had the technician, but it wasn't many more privileges than the novice. And that was the no code technician. And you could go step up and get your code technician, and it allowed you on 10 meters from 28.3 to 28.5, I believe it was. And the hobby, we kept dying down and dying down, and they got rid of the novice test. They got rid of all the technical questions on it. When I got it, you had to know that transmitter. We didn't have transceivers. We had separate transmitters, separate receivers. And you had to know how each one of those components worked in case you got a, like sending CW, somebody said you had a click on your signal, a key click. You had to know what was wrong with that transmitter and had to fix it, or you'd be getting a visit, believe me, from the FCC. But they've made it so easy now to become a ham because everybody's buying factory-made antennas, factory-made radios, and very few people nowadays can go in and work on their own transceiver because they're so complicated. They got to go back to the factory. But we've got a lot of new hams coming into it, and now everything's going digital, and they got rid of the tube-type radios. And I can't help it. They ain't nothing sounds like an old tube-type transmitter or a tube-type receiver. They just got that deep, mellow tone to them. But, Chad, I appreciate you coming over here and helping me today. Really, really do. And anytime I can help you, Chad, feel free to call me or holler at me on 2 meters. This is K4 KO4 NUE K4 OIM.